Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay and had a good weekend. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast on Monday, November the 17th. Coming up, a man describes conditions at a Kent hospital after his mum was treated in a corridor. A Kent MP speaks out after plastic pellets washed up on the county's coast. And we've got reaction from the Gillingham boss following a very entertaining game in front of the TV cameras. But first, a mum of four from Folkestone has described how she feared she was going to die after her jealous boyfriend put his hands around her throat and squeezed until she couldn't breathe. Gina Ayano has bravely described what happened after her attacker was jailed for 27 months. Well, Kate joins me now with more on this case. Kate, it sounds like the 42-year-old went through an horrific ordeal.
Absolutely. A court's been told how Richard Murray lashed out in December last year. The couple had invited a man they'd met online to their flat in St Michael Street. Prosecutors said Murray, who's also 42, had become jealous even before the visitor had arrived. The two men started chatting and Ms Ayano left the flat and sat on a wall outside. It was at this point Murray started calling her and accusing her of cheating.
And he then confronted her.
That's right. He found her in St Michael Street and grabbed her by the throat before pushing her over a wall. The victim fled through the town centre and received several threatening voice messages. She eventually returned home at around 5:15 in the morning and locked herself in the bathroom.
So what did Murray do then?
Well, the court was told he barged the door open, grabbed his victim by the throat, pushed her back against the wall and slapped her. She fled to the living room and it was there he squeezed her throat to the point where she couldn't breathe. Ms. Ayano eventually managed to covertly dial 999. Police arrived and Murray was arrested. It was also revealed Murray has 12 previous convictions for 23 offences, including several with domestic abuse aggravators. In 2021, he strangled a former partner until she lost consciousness.
And Kate, tell us a bit more about the sentence.
Well, Murray was jailed for 2 years and 3 months after admitting intentional strangulation and two counts of assault. However, with time already served since the attack, he's likely to be released in roughly 3 months. Gina doesn't think the sentence is long enough and has told us she's scared for the next woman who meets him. Murray's also been given a 5-year restraining order, preventing him from contacting Ms. Ayano.
Kate, thank you ever so much.
Kent Online News.
A Medway man who was found with more than 1,000 indecent images of children on his devices has pleaded guilty to breaching his bail conditions. James Thurston was awaiting sentence for the offences when he was found to be using an alias online and had a knife in his car. The 23-year-old from Chatham Grove will now remain in custody until his sentencing. A Folkestone man has been given a driving ban after being caught using an expired provisional licence. Brandon Crawford has never passed his test but was spotted behind the wheel of an Audi A5 on Cheriton Road in September. The 27-year-old from Folly Road admitted driving without a licence and without insurance. He's been given a 2-year ban. Police say they're investigating after copper cabling was stolen from two substations in Herne Bay, leading to household appliances being damaged. A number of families were left without power when the sites in Herne and Broomfield were targeted earlier this month. Bosses at UK Power Networks say the theft caused a rare fault which increased voltage to more than 40 homes. Contractors have been replacing or repairing affected items. There's a warning not to put laundry on overnight or while you're out of the house after a fire broke out in a kitchen in Ashford. Crews were called to tackle the blaze in the street yesterday. They're urging people not to leave washing machines on standby for too long after they've been used. Now, a man from Faversham says there's a lack of dignity for patients receiving so-called corridor care at a Kent hospital. Paul's mother is in her 80s and spent days on a trolley in a corridor behind the A&E department at the William Harvey in Ashford. Paul's been telling Kate about the conditions.
But they're just lined up along the corridor and it's a public corridor. So basically but it's also a service corridor. So if you want to go into the resus room, you have to press a buzzer. So you're constantly hearing noise, what's going on. The cleaners coming down because they've got a service room there as well. Lights on 24/7. So you're literally on a bed in a public area. And it doesn't really matter what age you are, but if you're elderly, 80-odd, there's no privacy, there's no privacy curtains. So you're just there in the nightgown that they put you in. And pretty much you're exposed to everything, and your handbag and your clothes are just on your bed. And if you wanted to use the toilet, you have to request somebody to get you in, because the nearest toilet was in the recess room, which is obviously a security locked door, so you need to be buzzed in. But they even suggested that if she needed to go, she could go in the bed in one of those little pots and they'd come and clean her up afterwards. But it's in a public corridor.
Your mother's clearly in there because she needs rest and recuperation and treatment. Do you think that having treatment in a corridor is it hampering the fact that she needs to get better? What impact is it having on her and her recovery?
I think the main thing is she wasn't eating at all. So basically, myself and my brother have been taking food and things like that into her because she wasn't eating the food that was given. And I think that's because they were getting the last doves, because it's not the normal ward type area. I think after 2 days, she eventually got given some fresh water. So, you know, there's an element on that. But then I did see a bunch of nurses crying, which is because they're struggling under the conditions to give care as well. So it's not necessarily a local council thing. It's, you know, and this isn't new for that hospital, because I think they were using the cafe earlier this year. If you go back, probably on your own web pages, it's happened year in, year out. So there's nothing new. They just don't have the capacity. And I don't understand that we can stand up cubicles, I guess, for COVID in a temporary way, which would actually be a better class of accommodation than what they're currently using. You know, so there's no curtain around any bed. So she had to have a catheter fitted and things like that, which so you had a temporary curtain to put, but there's nothing else there. You've got tubes in your and everything like that. So there's no dignity.
Now, this is as the latest figures show, the East Kent Hospitals Trust is the eighth worst performing in the country, with more than 1,200 trolley waits in October. The Trust say it's not the standard of care they want for their patients and are taking steps to reduce waiting times. Meantime, a Kent hospital that's been closed since July is due to reopen next month. The inpatient unit at Faversham Cottage Hospital was forced to shut because of a lack of staff. The 16-bed ward provides rehab for patients across East Kent. Bosses say it'll reopen on December the 2nd following a successful recruitment drive.
Kent Online reports.
Revised plans to build flats on the site of a former car sales near Folkestone have been rejected for a second time. Developers have been hoping to put 8 two-bedroom apartments on the old Riviera car sales site on Sangay High Street. They'd scaled down their initial ideas, but councillors on the local planning committee said it would harm the character and appearance of the conservation area. A new day nursery has opened to help meet provision in Headcorn after bosses received Ofsted registration. Bridges Nursery takes the place of Abacus on Smarden Road, which was forced to close following a complaint from the Education Watchdog. The new centre has new orders and operators. There are plans to increase charges at some of the long-stay car parks in Deal and Sandwich. Council bosses want to put fees up by 30%, meaning it would cost £13.80 to park for 7 to 10 hours. More than 1,000 people have signed a petition raising concerns about the impact on local businesses. Next today, plastic pellets dumped in the sea by Southern Water have now washed up on the Kent coast. The bio beads are used in wastewater treatment and are believed to have come from a plant in Eastbourne. They've been found on beaches including St Mary's Bay. Folkestone and Hythe MP Tony Vaughan has shared a video on his socials after speaking to a clean-up volunteer called Annie.
So I'm here at St Mary's Bay, where we're finding lots of plastic beads which have likely come from Southern Water's sewage treatment plant about 50 kilometres that way.
We could be finding these for years to come, coming all the way from Eastbourne. Mm. The sea will take them.
Yeah.
Far and wide.
Tons of them, potentially 10 tons of them, were likely released from their plant, and now birds and sea life, porpoises are all, you know, potentially going to eat these things and quite possibly die. So what I'd say is, Southern Water, you need to get yourself down here to Folkestone and Hythe beaches, clear up your mess and stop putting our wildlife and our birds at risk.
Southern Water have told us they've launched an investigation. Now, as COP30 continues in Brazil, bosses at a Kent college have told us they're making great progress towards being carbon neutral by 2030. £15.6 million is being spent on Mid-Kent College's campuses in Medway and Maidstone. Their Zero project has also picked up a top climate action award. Well, I've been speaking to Martin Pete, who's Executive Director of Finance and Estates.
The majority of the first part of the work that we've done reduces our carbon footprint by 70% in this one project. And that's really by reducing and eliminating the use of fossil fuel, as I say. So if what that means in easy language is we're getting rid of all our gas boilers and we're replacing the use of gas with other newer technologies such as ground source and air source heat pumps supported by solar power. We've also done some other work such as trying to get rid of the other parts of our gas. So things like our kitchens now run on induction hobs and no gas. So by the start of next year, 2026, we should be using zero gas.
Obviously, that is a huge project to undertake in itself. And for anyone, I haven't seen the Maidstone campus, unfortunately, but for anyone driving past the Medway campus, you can definitely see the solar panels, for example. But they look spectacular, particularly the one in the middle. it looks great. Just describe it for us.
At the front of our building in Medway, we have glass-fronted fire escapes, and they look fairly boring because they're basically glass. You can see the fire escape. We had one of the pieces of glass fail. And so I had the idea then to try and replace that with solar panel instead of glass. So therefore, what we actually looked at is trying to have vertical fitted solar panels, which is pretty much unique in the UK. But the bit that is absolutely unique is that we're the first to put a wrap over the top of that, which allows solar through. So we still generate electricity, but it has, as you say, a picture of a tree and our logo on it. The other two wings will be done in due course. What we're doing is collecting the data from the first one to make sure that it's not cutting out too much energy.
Obviously, the work in the building, it's been quite a big effort. The cost of doing all that, is it going to offset long term?
Yes, it will. I mean, so it's a very substantial amount of money to invest, but it's about a 14-year payback. So almost all of the equipment will last somewhere between 25 and 30 years. So by eliminating our gas bill, we're going to see a very significant saving in our energy costs each year. And we're still going to tackle more about the electricity cost as well. That will reduce somewhat because of the solar panels. But of course, the heat pumps run on electricity. So we have to have more solar to generate the power to run the heat pumps. But we'll still see a saving overall.
I know the Gillingham campus a bit better than Maidstone. Have you done anything specifically at Maidstone that is different to what you've been able to do at Gillingham? Because it's an older building, am I right that it's older in Maidstone?
It is older. At Maidstone, we have a large car park right in between our two buildings, which has got those issues. So therefore, we've put a very large bore field underneath there. So we have 59 boreholes, each going down 152 metres on average. So that's 18 kilometres worth of heat pipes that go under the car park, which you'll never know they're there. And they will generate heat from the earth that then goes into our energy centre and gets converted to provide the hot water and the heating for both of the buildings. And the other part that which we is really excited about, because we are the first in the world to try and do this, we have a solar carport put on top of that car park, which then provides solar energy. But the unique part is we're using what's called PVT, which is photovoltaic thermal. And this basically allows the heat from the glass of the solar panel, so not the UV, but the actual heat of the glass, will then heat water that's circulating underneath the solar panel. And then we're going to use that water to help provide hot water and heating, but we're also putting it back into the earth. So anything at all excess, we can then heat the earth back up and then that'll help us take it back out as ground source heat pump energy. So no one's trying to do this yet. Obviously the data that comes from that, we've got a huge amount of scrutiny from us from different industries and sectors because they really want to see how well this works.
And you can see pictures of those solar panels, which look very impressive, by heading to Kent Online.
Kent Online reports.
Bosses at Wingham Wildlife Park have sadly announced the death of one of their pumas. Binks was born at the site near Canterbury in 2011 and passed away following a battle with kidney disease. Elsewhere, the Big Cat Sanctuary in Smarden has welcomed a new Sumatran tiger. Two-year-old Kamala has moved there from Parken Zoo in Sweden as part of an international breeding programme. Two brothers from Thanet who once turned down an offer on TV's Dragon's Den are preparing to open a new £3 million gaming and entertainment venue. Chris and Mike Nell already run escape rooms across the county and are now building rival socials on the Wincheap Industrial Estate in Canterbury. We're told it'll have bowling, mini golf and shuffleboard, along with the UK's first game inspired by The Cube on TV. A famously wonky house in Rochester has gone up for sale. The property on the High Street, not far from the Castle and Cathedral, leans to one side and is above a micro pub. The four-bed property over three floors is described as charmingly uneven and could fetch up to £500,000. Turning attention now to our sister radio station KMFM, as their Give a Gift campaign is back for 2025. They'll be hoping to deliver toys to children and young people across Kent who will be spending Christmas either in hospital, living in care or facing difficult circumstances. Well, last year, your generosity meant they were able to distribute 16,200 presents to 18 different locations. Millie Moore is from the Caldecott Foundation in Ashford, who are one of those who benefited.
We support some of the most vulnerable young people in the UK, and the way that we support children is through residential homes. So we've got seven residential homes. We've got a boarding provision, which is a preventative measure. So it stops children from going into the care system. So those children that are on the cusp of care, and that's got 100% success for preventing the children from going into the care system. We've got a fostering service, and we've also got a special educational needs primary and secondary schools here on site in Kent, which is also open to day pupils. So I think we've got around 68 children across our primary and our secondary schools at the moment, around 17 in our fostering service, and 26 that live with us 365 days of the year.
So why have you guys decided to get involved in KMFM's Give a Gift campaign again this year?
KMFM Give a Gift campaign has supported Caldecott now for a number of years, and the gifts that are donated directly to Caldecott through the support of all of your listeners, it's absolutely phenomenal, because for many of the children, Christmas has never been a happy or a magical time. Some of these children have grown up where Christmas Day meant arguments, fighting or chaos. Many would never have had a present under the tree with their name on. Some haven't even had a Christmas tree before or seen Christmas lights. So it means so much for them to be able to experience a truly magical Christmas.
Yeah, absolutely. Talk me through from last year, the kind of the joy it did bring to see those children getting those gifts.
So I remember last year when Robin Noomi delivered so many gifts to the Caldecott Foundation, bags and bags of gifts. And these presents, they're not just toys or items, they represent kindness. And it also shows the children that somebody cares for them. So what we do is we gather all of the children's interests and their likes, their ages and their genders. So we've got like a wish list of all of our children, and then we send that out to KMFM, and then we get some really nice personalized gifts, and there's brand new as well. Like, how amazing is that? Because some of these children probably would have never had brand new toys. So it just means so much.
Details of how you can get involved are at kmfm.co.uk. Sean Williamson is going to be reprising his role as Barry in EastEnders in a special episode next month. The Maidstone-born actor who lives on Sheppey will return to his iconic role 21 years after being killed off. He'll appear alongside Pat Butcher as part of an ongoing dementia storyline. And Kent's Belvinda Sopal has survived another dance-off on Strictly. The EastEnders actress from Gillingham was joint bottom of the leaderboard after scoring 27 for her American Smooth. It means she's through to dance in Blackpool next week. Reality TV star Vicky Patterson became the latest celeb to be eliminated.
Kent Online Sports.
Football first up, and it was a point for Gillingham in League Two over the weekend. It finished 2-2 in front of the TV cameras against Crawley Town at Priestfield. Bradley Dack got the opener before Robbie McKenzie scored from the penalty spot. Well, Gillingham manager Gareth Ainsworth spoke to the club's media afterwards and said it was certainly an entertaining game.
There was two teams really going at it. It was, and I'm really proud of my boys, but I also give credit to Crawley Town. You know, they've come here They stuck to their guns. I think we forced them into not a usual style of football, but their second goal was, you know, a class act, and you've got to give credit to that, although we could have stopped it higher up the pitch. We've talked about that in the dressing room. One or two of the boys have stood up and gone, I could do better there, and I could do... And when I hear the boys saying that in the dressing room, I'm like, yeah, this is a good place now. These boys are taking ownership of things. We could have won it at the end as well with Johnny going down the wing, you know, and just for the want of a pick out would have been fantastic. But it would have been harsh on Crawley. I think they've come and they've been worthy opponents, very worthy opponents. And I think that Scott Lindsay, who is a fighter himself, by the way, will be very proud of his team not giving up today. Really disappointed in that header, if I'm honest. I think that may change the game if we go 2-0 up. I might change formation and try and see a game out. But it wasn't to be today. But we've probably had some decisions in the past that maybe we didn't deserve, but that one definitely went against us today. And I think it's onside. I think it's a great finish. And it would have been Daki's second goal of the game, which would have been great for him.
Let's talk about his first goal with a tremendous strike, like one off the training ground. But a ball like that, the person you want at the end of it is Bradley Dack.
Yeah, and listen, I'm going to give Dobbo total credit for this because I ask every week, I ask what can we do from set pieces, and I task my staff and say, look, I don't want to be boring, I don't want to be standard, you need to come up with something. And obviously Dobbo's worked really hard and he's come up with a fantastic corner there. We rehearsed it in training yesterday, and Daki scored in training as well, and we thought, you know what, that might well happen, you know, with the way Crawley defend corners. We thought he might get free. The boys running everyone in have done a great job, and the only problem is it's on TV, so we can't do it for now for 6 months, you know. So, but be wary in 6 months, that might come out again. No, we're really, really lucky to have someone with the quality of Daki to be on the end of that. And there's 18 people in front of the goal and a goalkeeper, and there's probably one place he can put it, which is the top corner. And if you want anyone to do that, it is Brad. And great from him. Great way to take the lead just before half time. But gutted we weren't 2-0 up, because I think that's a mistake by the officials.
The Jewels are now seventh in the League Two table. Staying with football, and it was a win for London City Lionesses in the WSL. They beat Aston Villa 3-1 away from home yesterday. The side, who train in Aylesford, are currently sixth in the table with 4 wins from their 8 games so far. And it's hoped a major redevelopment at one of Kent's most prestigious golf courses could see it host the Ryder Cup. The multi-million pound project at the London Golf Club in Sevenoaks will see a 5-star hotel, spa, sports pavilion and luxury lodges built in the coming years. It's hoped it will put the facility well and truly on the international map. They've currently got a bid in to host the 2035 Ryder Cup. And reporter Sean McPolin has been speaking to Stephen Follett, who is the chief exec.
The project came about because of, yes, a Ryder Cup bid that we were involved in. And when we looked at that Ryder Cup bid, our hospitality offering was the weakest part of our bid. So that's when we started to look at the planning. We actually had an existing planning permission for a 140-bedroom hotel, but it wasn't enough for what we wanted to achieve. So the project then grew arms and legs after that to where we are today. And I think really, what we'd like to achieve is, as I said earlier, create a turnkey solution for any event. Yes, a golf tournament like the Ryder Cup or any of the other golf tournaments that are potentially in the marketplace, we'd like to be able to host them, but we'd also like to be able to hold conferences. You know, speaking to people that visit Kent, the size of hotel we're creating and the conference space that we're creating would help them bring international conferences to Kent. So I think that's what we'd like to achieve. We'd like to achieve a venue that we could host golf tournaments, major conferences. That's really where we are.
You mentioned the Ryder Cup there, a previous bid. When was that, and do you think it'll be bidding in the year?
Where we are, we're still officially on the shortlist. So there's the shortlist, as you would have seen in the press recently, Catalonia and Spain, Camaral was awarded 2031. So officially still the 2035, which is the next available Ryder Cup for somewhere in Europe. We sit still on the shortlist for that. So at the moment, we're just waiting to hear. We're continuing with our project, as I'm sure the other venues are, and we're still just waiting to hear. And ongoing dialogue with the European Tour and the Ryder Cup people.
Sean also spoke briefly to Alex Richards, who's the managing partner of Holloway Studios Architects, about what the project will look like.
We wanted to do a design that understood where it was, so contextually in the countryside, but also something that would get better with time and age well. And the hotel is on this lovely slope of the land. It's got a spectacular view of the golf course, and we thought rather than blonking a building on there, if we could simply sort of terrace the landscape and use the building to sort of fold over the roof, and that informed the architecture, so then it could age like a landscape would age rather than a building. And then that kind of set the narrative for the other buildings across the site, that maybe they could feel like a family of buildings rather than just a series of plonked buildings.
All sounds very exciting, and you can see pictures by heading to the Sevenoaks pages of Kent Online. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials, plus you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, just head to kentonline.co.uk, and whilst you're on the website, you can also sign up to Kent Online Premium. It gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.